Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And as I was telling our friends on KTTH before our friends at Cairo were able to join us, we got a good one planned for you. I know I say it every week, but it's something we take pride in. We got another great interview lined up with one of my favorite guests. He's been on many times, Mr. Kevin Muir, the proprietor of the Macro Tourist blog. And the reason I wanted to have on Kevin is the same reasons I've wanted to have him on in the past, is that Kevin has been in the game for a really long time, been a really successful money manager and trader. And also, he really pays no time and no mind to the, you know, the rhetoric of the day. He's focusing on the work and he's focusing on the facts on the ground. And he's not nearly, you know, he's not worried about how those line up with the popular narrative. And, you know, I mean, like in life, right? That's the secret to success. You know, when you're running around worried if you sound like everybody else and you're doing things that conform, you know, chances are you're not getting, you know, superior results. And he's just a great guy, great guest. So I'm excited to bring that. We go long. It's a longer one. We went for over 70 minutes, like 73 minutes. Anyway, so we'll only, as always, we're going to air a part of the interview. And then if you want to hear the remainder of it, which I would strongly suggest, because it's not a narrative you're going to hear a lot. actually, there's some, one of the, again, not to beat up on him, but one of the guys that actually is somewhat similar to the way that we're seeing things is Jim Cramer. And that does make me a bit uncomfortable. But, again, you know, I think I give Jim a bad time a lot, but, you know, when I think he's making a good point, I do think he's looking in completely the wrong direction. So, you know, we're going to get, like I said, we're going to get into that. But I do agree with a lot of what he's saying, and I want people just, I think the theme of this show, guys, is keep an open mind, okay? And don't jump to conclusions. I've had a lot of clients come on, or listeners. I've had emails, people concerned that, you know, I've lost my morals or that I'm advocating stimulus. Guys, I'm not. I wish we didn't have stimulus. I wish we didn't need it. I wish the government wouldn't have created these circumstances in the first place. I wish that we wouldn't be bailing out billionaires and billionaire investors every single time the market takes a dive and not bailing out small business owners. I think all those things, right? But at the end of the day, my job is to manage money. So what I think about those things isn't nearly as important as what those things are, what is taking place. Furthermore, our jobs as asset managers is to look down the road, to set our own bias aside and look down the road and say, okay, this is what's coming. Because whether we engage in it or not, whether we make money or lose money between now and when that seemingly inevitable occurrence comes to fruition, it doesn't have any impact on whether it comes to fruition or not. And that's something I tell my clients all the time, is I'm not a heartless capitalist, not by any stretch of the imagination. Bulwark gives 10% of its profits away every year to charities and people in need. And I'm not saying that to virtue signal. I don't believe in it. That's a personal practice, and we don't advertise it. We don't say who we send it to, because I think that's between, I just don't think giving should be done in public like that. But anyway, I'm not a heartless capitalist. I'm also not a socialist that's advocating money giving away. I'm simply looking at it and saying, look, I can tell you what I think. What I think is that we have been giving money to corporations and, you know, benefits to quote unquote rich people. When I'm talking about rich people, I'm not talking about the guy that's got a $4 million net worth that owns his own business and built it from the, you know, built it with his own blood and sweat. I'm talking about billionaire investors where the Fed steps in with printed money and starts buying up corporate bonds to bail them out of a pinch, because they had a levered up bond portfolio because they were running a risk parity strategy. Now, for some of you, that doesn't sound like anything, but if you look at what happened in the stimulus earlier this year, the vast majority of that stuff, I mean, guys, that was just aimed at corporations and it was to save the airlines. No, it wasn't. It was to save the people that were invested in them, that owned their debt and stock. Okay. And so when you're giving away trillions of dollars in that every single time the market hits a downturn, and because of that, it's one of the primary drivers that you've got a record wealth gap in the country. What I'm saying is it's really hard to make the argument to not do some of these stimulative things like infrastructure spending and even maybe paying off student loans because you think it's financially irresponsible. Well, I'm looking at you going, yeah, well, you've been paying everybody else. Right. And furthermore, I'm telling you what I think is coming down the pipe. So don't think that I'm endorsing it. I'm not. I didn't endorse the 08-09 bailouts, not the way they did them. I didn't endorse the way they took over GM, not the way they did it. I don't endorse a lot of these things, but they happened. And the problem is you've created another moral hazard. Now you've got this sentiment where I don't agree with it. I don't think it was the intent from the beginning, but we also have to recognize that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't think it was the intent of government or the Federal Reserve to create a giant wealth gap, but that's what happened. And now they've got the economy and the market so strung out on debt, artificially cheap debt, that they've got to keep printing. And it's only natural, you know, they're not going to stop. So I would rather have them quit pointing it at the billionaires and rather do it in such ways that even though we know they're going to poorly allocate those funds because that's what they do. At least it's aimed at the consumer side of it and the middle class side of it now. So I would just encourage you, when you're listening to this show, let's set idealistic outcomes behind us, because none of us, whether we're on the right or the left, what I'm telling you is none of us, there isn't an ideal outcome, right? We're looking at a set of outcomes. It's sort of like tax policy. Like one of the things I try to remind people about when you get into tax policy debates, let's just keep in mind that I think all level-headed people can acknowledge that taxes in some form or fashion have to get paid, which means by definition, whatever solution we come up to on the tax side, somebody's not going to be happy with it. Right? It's like figuring out who's going to clean, you know, with my kids, who's going to clean the kitchen tonight. No matter how fair of a system we come up with determining who should clean the kitchen, I can guarantee you as a parent of multiple children, somebody's not going to be happy. Right? And so in those scenarios, I think we need to go into it going, okay, look, we're not going to get the best case scenario. It's not realistic. We're not going to get an everybody wins scenario. It's not the way it works. It's also, right, those are perfect outcomes. I hate to break it to you, but government doesn't have a very good track record of generating perfect outcomes where everybody's happy, right? And that relates to so many things going on. So I just want to put out that cautionary moment right there and say, listen, before you think I'm endorsing these things, I'm not. I also know for a fact that what I think about them has nothing to do with what will actually get done. And it will have nothing to do with the performance of our clients' portfolios. And what is my job as a fiduciary? It is to properly manage my clients' assets, making them the most productive while preventing or protecting against risks, right? To preserve capital if things don't go as planned. You know, it's not like we get an extra 5% a year bonus because we do things in an idealistic fashion. And I've said so many times, that's one of the reasons we don't get really into politics. First of all, there's enough place. We do it where they intersect with finance and investing, and they do seem to do that a lot these days. But we don't in general, because there's plenty of other places to go get that information. And we want to be one of those places. So we're going to get into the market update. I went a little bit long setting up this show today. But just I'd encourage everybody to keep an open mind. And realize that these are very complex issues. And if you think there's a black or white or a wrong or right answer, you're going to be sorely disappointed. And because of that uncertainty, right? I've said it before and I'll say it again on the show. There is nothing that I find less attractive and more scary in the world of investing than certainty, because it does not exist, especially today. And I don't think the magnitudes of outcomes has ever been larger. And what I'm saying is, you know, you've got the 10-year U.S. Treasury at historic lows, not the lowest it's ever been, but still sub 1%. And yet it wouldn't surprise me within 2 to 3 years if it was paying 4.5 to 5. Now, am I saying I think that's a likely outcome? No. I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me. I would put it on, you know, a tail on the bell-shaped curve of distribution, you know, the distribution of possible outcomes. But it could certainly happen. And this is why we're constantly talking about risk management. What is the only thing we know on any given day? It's what exposure to risk we have and what we're being paid for that. Right. And making sure that we continue to grow client assets to protect them for the inflation that is no question coming down the pipeline. Not an if, it's a when. But while still protecting against the catastrophic loss. And that's what way too many of you have. You've got these one-way portfolios. When market's going up, both the bonds and the stocks are going up. Bonds barely, mostly dead weight on performance. And if you don't believe me, call me and I'll show you your performance versus, you know, tons of other things that you could have done with your cash that is safer than bonds and cheaper than bonds. And I'll just prove it to you. But the point is you still have a one-way portfolio. As long as this whole Willy Wonka monetary experiment continues to work and continues to drive asset prices higher, you're good to go. But if it falls off a cliff and you're sitting at record high valuations, you're sitting at record high debt on balance sheets. You know, what do I think the outcome is, guys? I think the outcome is inflation. I think it's a lot more than people think. At the same time, when you're dealing with markets this overheated, you know, I mean, you know, don't be shocked if your portfolio loses 40 to 50% in the next 16 months. I'm not saying it's going to, but I mean, don't be shocked. You know, it prevents one of those scenarios where like, I can't believe I lost that much. You look at them and go, the market had never been more expensive. What were you thinking? Ah, I should have. Right? Take the regret out of it. How do you do that? Risk management. Give us a call. We'll walk you through how we do it. Increase your upside exposure. Lower your risk. Lower your fees. Do it every day, guys. It's not hard. There's a better way than what you're traditionally doing. There's a better way to do it. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Invest the 3 minutes to give us a call, get some information, invest the 3 minutes for your financial well-being for the rest of your life. Seems like a cheap trade-off. Anyway, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the rest of the market update. Stick with us. You're listening to the Know Your Risk podcast on Know Your Risk Radio.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
You know, we can't always count on great health as we age. That's why I cannot overstate the peace of mind I feel having long-term care coverage for me and my wife. If you've been thinking about it, but you have some questions, this is a great time to get answers. Join my friends from 525 Advisors for one of their free long-term care planning live webinars they have coming up. At the webinar, they'll explain how long-term care works, what the coverage pays for, and you'll discover all the new options and different ways to fund a plan. And then when you're ready, 525 Advisors, they are the best in the country. And I know that because my wife and I went through the whole process with Brian and Madeline, and man, they take great care of their customers. Check out all their reviews. People love working with Brian and Madeline at 525 Advisors. So sign up today, 525longtermcare.com. Join them for one of their upcoming live webinars. webinars. The class is free. All you have to do is go to 525longtermcare.com. 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. And let's get right into it. I always try to get the market update in that first segment, and it never quite happens for me. There's too many other things to discuss. Anyway, let's get into it, though. Some of the big ones. So we're recording on Friday afternoon, as always. Friday right around noon. Yeah, it's technically afternoon, 12:30. Got 28 minutes left in the market here before the close. one of the biggest stories today, and I think one of the biggest stories this week, is Disney. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the segment, and I will circle back to it. But good announcement from Disney. We'll circle back on that one. But it's if you look at the market today, truthfully, Disney is pulling a lot of weight. It's the Dow is up 48, but Disney is a big Dow component. It's up so far in the day. We're oscillating back and forth between being up 14, up 15. Big move. And again, not recommending Disney. We'll talk about it more, but I think it's actually warranted. I think there's some meat to it, and we'll dig into that. Other interesting thing, oil continues to rally. I mean, you're bumping up against 50 now. We've got oil right at, bumping up against 47 right now, so approaching that 50 number. And I know there's a lot of consternation and confusion about this, guys, but I think that what you're seeing in value stocks, I think what you're seeing in oil, I think what you're seeing in energy and in quote-unquote old economy stocks, I think what you're seeing is just you're looking through. Remember, markets are always looking ahead. Markets should not and typically do not reflect the reality on the ground today. They're forward-looking, right? Now, I think like most things, that can be taken to an extreme, and I've joked about this before. All too often, I see people justifying irrational market moves with, boy, the market, you know, they treat the market like it's this one-eyed magical oracle, right? That sees through walls. It's not that, I can assure you. Markets, and I think you see a lot of it going on right now where, markets for whatever reason, usually a confluence of events, kind of lose their tether to reality. And I think most of the time markets are giving you really competitive, very realistic prices. And there are parts of this market that are certainly doing that. There are parts that aren't, and we'll get into that. But what oil is telling us is that I think oil is looking forward to the second half of this year when the economy has opened up. So much oil supply has been shut off. There's just a lot less of it now being produced. Okay. And what the market is looking at is that when the economy reopens, will it be like it was previously in 2019? No, that's going to take a while. But I'll tell you what, you're going to see a surge. And Kevin and I talk about this in the interview. You're going to see a surge of activity in consumer spending. Not with everybody, not the people that these lockdowns have ruined. But you're going to see a surge of spending. You're going to see travel. You're going to see vacations. You're going to see people going to Vegas. You're going to see people continue to remodel their houses, taking advantage of record low rates. You're going to see people buying more houses, right? There's a lot of pent-up demand. Now, I think the big mistake people are making is extrapolating that pent-up demand out. I think it's too early. I think it's going to come in fits and starts. And all of this is assuming that the pumps keep running. And right now, I think the biggest threat to it, and I don't want to steal too much thunder from the discussion Kevin and I have, but I think the biggest threat to all of this, this reflation narrative and this whole pent-up demand thing is the printing. And again, I'm not advocating it one way or the other. I'm trying to handicap what's going to happen. If they keep bickering and waiting too long on approving some kind of stimulus test, all of that reflation talk and pent-up demands talk starts to come into question, really starts to become a doubt, and I think it becomes moot. I will still stick to this. If they keep printing, this can keep going. If they don't, it'll get ugly really quick, which I think will precipitate them printing. So to me, And guys, I understand the damage that's done to the economy, but you got to understand the way things work. If an economy contracts by 10% and a government prints and through stimulus and infrastructure spending and things like that, if the government prints more than that amount, more than that 10% of the economy's worth of money and dump it into the system, things go up. Doesn't mean they've repaired that hole, but if they're willing to stand in the gap and keep printing, they're going to be successful in driving the value of the dollar down and continuing to push asset prices higher. You may not like it. You may not think it's a good long-term decision. I don't, but it's what they're going to do. So, you know, I just think you'd leave your hole, whether you like it or whether you agree with it, at the door, because again, at the end of the game, our goal is to make you as secure as possible in retirement. That's it. And sitting in cash or bonds paying you 1.5% because you disagree with government's actions, of which you have no control over, that doesn't make a lot of rational sense, right? So, you know, go against it at your own, you know, at your own risk. There's a better way to do things. Educate yourself. Invest 3 minutes for the rest of your life. Anyway, got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back to discuss Disney, and then we're going to get into our interview. Stick with us through the break. This is Know Your Risk Radio on the Know Your Risk, or excuse me, this is Know Your Risk Radio podcast on Know Your Risk Radio.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently, one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hi, this is Brian Ott with 525 Advisors, and I want to say thank you for tuning in to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. If you're like me, you look forward to this every weekend. I have been working with Zach and his team for several years now because Zach gets it. He puts his clients first. And for me, that's what it's all about. I know retirement planning can seem daunting at times, but my personal experience has taught me having a professional in your corner is essential. And Zach and his team have proven to me and my clients to be a tremendous asset. Not only will he guide you through your options, he will listen to you and make your concerns his top priority. So give Zach and his team a call. You'll be glad you did. And when you're ready, we can show you how to make sure your retirement plans aren't derailed by an extended healthcare event. We have many options to protect your nest egg and your family, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. You can learn more about us and our upcoming events at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Another one that continues to play out that I find fascinating, let me pull this up real quick, is uranium. We're just seeing action in uranium stocks that we haven't seen in a really long time. And, you know, let's see, one of the mainstays that I think most people know is Cameco. Cameco's up 7% today. Some of the uranium mining companies are up big today, and they've had big rallies. I'm talking like 30, 40% in the last three sessions or something for Cameco, something like that. And again, I think that stuff like that is telegraphing inflation. I think stuff like this is also telegraphing. And I said this back when the thing started, back in March and April, when we were talking about it over the summer. One of the things, uranium has been dirt cheap for a really long time, a really long time. And it's been a house of horrors. We've been looking at it for a really long time and have just been really careful. Because one of the things I've learned about commodities like this is you need to wait until there's a catalyst. You need to wait until something shifts, because you can be sitting on dead money for a really long time. And even though you get it really cheap, it can get cheaper in a hurry. And what was interesting to me about COVID is that all the governments around the world were going to print. They were going to try to stimulate their way out of this because they were scared to death of a serious recession happening that they caused with all of this debt out there and all of these obligations and all this potential, you know, I mean, you know, this market, this whole financial system, if nothing else, is like a forest that hasn't been cleared or hasn't been, you know, dealt with at all for like 30 years, meaning there is a lot of dry tinder. Yeah, they're going to come out and say that because they don't want people to not have confidence. But I mean, that's just the facts. So they're going to do whatever they can. And one of the things they're going to do is infrastructure spending. You've heard people talking about it. Well, what's the big push? Green energy. What have we also said? If you're serious about green energy, and the more level-headed people who are even, you know, really pushing this green energy thing harder than I think it deserves at this moment, not because I don't care about the environment, just we're not anywhere nearly as ready to do that as they make it sound, economically speaking. But if you're serious about clean energy, nuclear has to be part of the solution. It's not feasible without it. So what did we think governments would do? We thought they'd build nuclear power plants. Creates jobs. What does that also do? It creates greater demand for uranium. And you're looking at a uranium market right now that has, that is not, if as it sits today, it won't be able to keep up with current levels of demand, let alone increased demand. And that industry has been starved for capital for a long time. So you haven't been developing any new uranium mines. And the reason for it is the market price for uranium right now is about $30 a pound. I think on average, it costs the industry like $55 to $60 a pound to break even. Right. So that tells you that there has to be a supply shortage out there. And you can't make money. You can't get new capital investment. Nobody wants to put their money. Wait, you want me to invest in a mine where we're going to sell this stuff for 30 and it costs us 60? As you can imagine, if that was your investor presentation, it wouldn't go over well, right? So, and you see these things just levitating. I think it's starting to bake that in, some of that reflation and government stimulus side of things that we were talking about. Another big one, guys, right? The IPOs that came off this week. I don't really know what to tell you about that. I will tell you that this is the highest number of IPOs at any point in the last 21 or 22 years that have doubled in the first day, going back to the height of the tech bubble. And there's a really interesting thing that if you're in those IPOs and you got in them early, congratulations. Hopefully you made a lot of money. But there's something that I think is fascinating about IPOs, especially on some of these companies like DoorDash, who just had, via lockdowns, just had their biggest quarter ever, you know, this huge run up in their revenue. And, you know, they IPO the company. I think the company's up 80% over the IPO price just on the first day. It's given a little bit back, but it's still right there. And then yesterday you had Airbnb, right, up 130% on the first day. I don't really know. One of the things that I find so fascinating about that is if you want to talk valuations, it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, DoorDash delivers food. You know, you look at the multiple on it and it's nuts. It's everybody's treating it like it's tech or something. It's not. They deliver food, man. So, I mean, I got a food delivery business. Yeah, great. It doesn't mean they can't make money, but I mean, the valuations are just insane. They're valuing it like a tech company. It's, you know, what is it, 18, 20 times earnings? They deliver food, for God's sake. People are like, well, look at the revenue growth. Okay, yeah, great. What is the profitability going to be? How's that work? Eventually that will matter. It will. Saw almost the exact same stories in 98, 99. The other thing that I think people forget is those people know that they're on a rocket ship. The people that started those companies. And the thing that I find interesting about IPOs is at the end of the day, it's people selling stock, right? It's the owners, it's the insiders of the company that have birthed the company, that have raised it, that probably understand their company a little bit better than us, right? They invented it, they started it. And they've reached a point where they believe that selling a good chunk of their ownership, a good chunk of their stock, right? They're selling because they're getting a desired price. And I think it's always stunning to me when you see this kind of IPO mania set in, where the people that know the company the best are willing to sell at a price, a substantial amount of stock too. They're willing to sell at a price. And on that exact same day, where that owner is willing to give part of his child away, right? Because he's being paid handsomely enough for it. The public thinks it's worth 130% more, literally a few seconds later. Who do you think knows the company better? The people buying it or the people selling it? Now, that's anecdotal, but I'm just saying, stop and think about that for a second. If it's worth 130% more, would they have agreed to IPO at that price? No, of course not. They'd have gotten more than double the amount of money and they'd have suffered half the dilution. Of course they wouldn't have. It's insanity. And truth be told, if those insiders right now could sell more of their stock, I guarantee you they would. Why? If they weren't locked up, why? Because they'd just sell it for 130% more than they agreed to just sell some. If you don't think that this is bubbly right now, what's going on? If you can't see it, then you need to get your eyes checked. I mean, that's plain and simple. And like I said, I mean, you're kind of out of superlatives here, guys. I mean, you just haven't seen this since the greatest bubble in a sector, I would say, in the United States. And I could be mistaken, but I think it's probably the biggest one sector bubble we had was the tech bubble late 90s. We're right there, and on a lot of metrics, we're past it. Yeah, it's a little different this time. Yeah, these companies are, some of them are profitable. But that's also one of the myths that's grown over time about the 99 tech bubble. Well, this time is different because these companies actually have revenue. You go back and look at the revenue growth that companies like Yahoo were trading, and then go look at Yahoo at its highest valuation. I think it got up to 12 or 13 times revenue, right? Well, guys, start poking around at the companies that are really popular, the hot stocks here. You're talking about 20, 30, 40 times revenue. Apple, for God's sakes, is trading at 8.5 times revenue, barely growing. One of the narratives that people, like I said, is, well, it's different this time. These companies are actually making money. Go back and look at revenue growth. Go look at profitability. Yahoo was profitable. Didn't mean their stock didn't drop by 85%. Why? Because everybody started to realize, wait a second, they're not going to keep growing at this rate. And the growth isn't as profitable as we thought it would be. And the valuations came back in line with what would be normal on that business. And then they actually got too cheap. So one of the things I tell these tech people or these people is I just firmly believe, you know, you'll get an opportunity anytime. And I'm sure there's exceptions with individual names, but for the most part, anytime somebody's like, well, you got to own this sector. And it was at record high valuations. If you waited, you got a chance to get in there for cheaper and usually a lot. So I would just, again, they're, you know, another sign of bubble. If you're in those IPO stocks, congratulations. Well done. Hope you made a boatload of money, but, you know, be careful. And if you want to avoid the blowups that are caused by chasing those kind of things, right? If you want to avoid those kind of scenarios, if you think that this is a bubble and it could pop at any moment. Now, you guys know my deal. I think it's going to be a bumpy ride going forward, but I think they will default to printing because that's what they've done for the better part of the last 15 years. Again, I don't like it. I'm not saying I'm endorsing it. I'm just saying that's what's going to happen. I actually think it's going to be a really bumpy ride with some massive volatility, kind of like this year. But I think over time that markets do resolve themselves higher because they will not stop printing. And if you have a desire to be able to navigate that and not get freaked out and not get crushed in those bouts of big volatility that could last anywhere from 6 months to a year, you never know. But you still want to be able to protect your money against the inflation that seems very inevitable at this point. and you want to actually increase your upside potential and lower your fees and drastically reduce your risk, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Guys, 3 minutes. 3 minutes, get our Common Sense Investing booklet, or just set up a risk review with me. We'll go over your portfolio, compare it to how we do things, give you the difference in cost, and boom, there you go. You're free to make your own decision. No twisting arms. Thanks for sticking with us. And this is going to be a shorter segment, guys, because I do not want to spend... I want to start out right out of the gate saying this is not investment advice. I am not telling you to go out and buy this stock. I am not telling you to sell this stock. I'm just talking about something really interesting and what I think, in my opinion, could serve as sort of a catalyst for this change in valuations and a return to a more normal footing as it relates to earnings, as it relates to stock prices. So we were talking earlier about the big pop in Disney. Now, full disclosure, we bought Disney at right around 120, I want to say. Could have gotten it cheaper earlier in the year, looking at other things. That's fine. And why did we buy it? The reason we bought Disney, other than the fact that I think it's a really good company that has a lot of protection, right? I'm not worried about somebody else creating another Disney that knocks Disney off their stool. I think there's a lot of protections, a lot of moats around that business. They clearly are masters at family content, child content. The parks will reopen. I think the parks will be a huge recipient of the COVID bounce back, right? People that had plans to take. I mean, think of how many trips to Disneyland got missed, right? And unlike a steak dinner, right? We come out of lockdown and people are going to go have a steak dinner. They're not going to go have six of them in a week to make up for all the steak dinners they missed over lockdown. They will all, or a massive percentage of them, end up going to Disney and spending Disney World or Disneyland and spending just as much, if not more, than they were planning on the first time. In addition to that, they've launched Disney Plus. And the fascinating thing about Disney Plus is it is growing fast. And I don't want to get in break down all the earnings, but it is growing fast and they just increased the price. So when I look at, they're turning into a giant in streaming. It's happening. I mean, the numbers, I've got it at our house for our kids and our family. A lot of good stuff on there. And the reason that's intriguing to me is who are they competing with, right? Primarily Netflix. Amazon's getting in there too, obviously, but you know, the giant in the space is Netflix. The interesting thing, and I'd say this is true with Amazon as well, and it's also true with a company like Disney. Netflix's entire valuation is built on the same thing that Disney just launched with Disney Plus. And everybody's made a big deal about how much money Netflix has spent for content creation. Well, the interesting thing about Disney is Disney can basically ramp up Disney Plus without really increasing their spend. They were making shows anyway. They were making movies anyway. They were operating a television channel anyway. So all you're doing is just adding in this additional revenue stream that just allows them to further monetize the spend that they were already doing. And because of that, when you look at the other companies in this zone, you know, in this market, in this tech space, and you look at Disney Plus and you look at the valuation that the market puts on Netflix, just the streaming service, and then you flip over to Disney, I got to tell you, on a rational basis, it's really hard to justify the valuations on each. Disney being far too low, Netflix being too high. And here's another reason. Disney's version of Disney Plus should be way more profitable than Netflix because they can use it to complement all the other segments of their business, right? They launch a movie, people are still going to go to the theaters, but now that movie will actually increase subscription to Disney Plus in addition to that, which will help more people see their movies, which will help them sell more merchandise, which will drive more people to the parks. And those excess profits can help them subsidize the content spend over there on the platform side of the business for Disney Plus. And then you go look at the valuation differences. You're like, wait a second, how is Disney valued here when they have many other market segments that are going to help them win the streaming war? right? So they've got way more bullets in their gun than Netflix does. How in the world are they going to lose out? And I just tell you, I don't see how they can. And that doesn't mean Netflix has to implode. But I mean, I look at Disney and I'm like, well, shoot. I mean, you look at how fast those subscription numbers. If you put a Netflix multiple on that, I mean, the price of the stock should be way higher. Not to mention when the parks turn back on and everything at Disney out gets ramped up, their profitability is going to be way higher than it was previously. And the reason I said this is a microcosm is because I think that all of a sudden, with that, with the market opening up and the economy turning back on, you're going to see those tech companies, a lot of them maintain their same trajectory and still make, you know, growing their revenues really strong and all that kind of stuff. But I think the biggest jump in earnings you're going to see over the next couple of years are these types of stocks. And that's really another part of why we're saying I think people are way too loaded up in tech. I think that I think it's sort of midnight at that party. It may go till 2 or 3 in the morning. Who knows? Right? Who can predictably, or you know, who can predict the trajectory of a high school alcohol fueled party? Right? That's kind of what this bubble is in these tech things. I'm just saying the fundamental story. What's attractive to me are these other plays. You know, the stuff in the energy space. So. And if you want to make sure that you're not too overexposed to that tech stuff, if you want to make sure that people are looking with this type of insight and rigor at the investments they put you in, guys, give us a call. Because I do. I think there's a scenario that, you know, you could have a market flat to slightly negative next year. I'm not saying I think that's what's going to happen. And you could have sectors like, you know, the Disneys of the world, uranium, you know, energy up 30, 40, 50, 60, 70%. And how could you still have a negative market in that environment? Because these things make up such a ridiculous low percentage of the S&P 500. Anyway, I just think this is a big rotation that people don't want to miss. And if you don't want to miss it and you want to make sure you're not too overloaded in tech and you're not sitting there, you know, watching these things blow paya, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. As always, you can follow me on Twitter, at KYR Radio. Anyway, we got to run, got to get to our interview with Kevin Muir. We're going to bring that up next. Stick to us. And as always, the interview, due to time constraints, is going to get shut off short. But you can hear the rest of it, and you're going to want to hear the rest of it about how it pertains to what 2021 and 2022 are going to look like. Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast, and there you go. You can get the rest of the episode. It's as easy as that. Go to mynorthwest.com, iTunes.com. We're on all those podcast platforms. Anyway, but stick with us to hear our interview with Kevin Muir coming up next. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast on the Know Your Risk Radio.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, recently, one of the largest investment banks in the country, finally published research showing why a 60-40 stock bond portfolio is outdated. This is something you've been talking about on Know Your Risk Radio for years. Now they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Dory, it certainly feels that way. This research shows exactly what we've been telling people for years now. Using bonds as the safe portion of your portfolio is a serious gamble, and now is not the time to be gambling your retirement. With Bulwark's bond replacement strategy, we'll show you how to protect your portfolio against loss, but still grow your assets. We teach you exactly how to do it in our free booklet, Common Sense Investing.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing. Call 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm is licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, for my favorite segment of the show, interview time. Been wanting to have this guy on for a bit now, especially since his most recent appearance on Real Vision. And it's been a while since we had him on. So welcome again to the show, Mr. Kevin Muir.
It's great to be with you today, Zach.
Hey, before we get started, I want to start with we talked about the macro tourist letter last time, and I told you I was subscribing. And I realized this morning when I was going to have you on, I'd completely spaced out and didn't do it. But I am looking right now at a page on the Macro Tourist website that says, thank you, you are subscribed as Zach at Bulwark Capital Management. So I have officially done what I told you I was going to do.
Oh, it's very really kind of you. I appreciate the support, Zach.
Well, and you don't need it. I was just saying that I'd missed. I was sitting there the other day, and I think I saw you post, or no, it was this morning. I don't know where, but I saw a recent post, and I went, oh, crap, I miss reading it, A. And I also have been meaning, you know, anyway, so we all...
Let's be truthful, Zach. You missed the pictures. Everyone says they're subscribing for the letter, but we know they're just going for the pictures.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, it's... I wouldn't lie. I mean, you know, that's how I still buy books. You know what I mean? there aren't enough pictures in it. That's why technical analysis is luring me more and more by the day. No words needed, right?
I hear you.
Anyway, man, it was really interesting to hear your take on Real Vision recently, because I have been concerned about things economically and still am concerned. Yet at the same time, I kind of see this explosive atmosphere, if you will. And it feels like somebody's about ready to strike a match. And I believe in your interview, you referred to it as a room full of gasoline and somebody was going to smoke a cigarette or something like that.
Right.
Anyway, can you walk us through that a little bit and get into that a little bit for our listeners
sure.
that haven't seen that interview?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So over the last 40 years, we've tried to solve every single slowdown through monetary means, meaning that we've lowered interest rates whenever we've had a recession. And what this has done is it's put all the focus on the private sector taking more and more debt. And that's basically how, you know, you encourage new consumption when this economy slows down by lowering rates. So someone goes out and they buy a house or they buy a new car, and that's how you get it going. The trouble is that we've done this for the past 40 years, as I mentioned, and in 2008, when the great financial crisis hit, we hit the point at zero. You know, we lowered rates to zero, and people still didn't want to take any money. And the reason for that is that basically the balance sheets were stretched, and people were feeling rightfully very scared about it. And we then proceeded to go do a whole raft of new kind of monetary, you know, science projects where, you know, quantitative easing, Operation Twist, all these different things. And at the same time, you know, the problem at that time was that we had too much debt in the system, and it was mostly private and corporate debt that I'm talking about at that time. And the government looked at it and said, geez, if they have too much debt, we have too much debt, that's a real problem. And the government went and actually cut spending in the great financial crisis. And a lot of people think about it, oh no, like, you know, Obama was one of the most spendthrift presidents around. And I always say, if you look through history and you look through what, you know, the federal budget, the discretionary budget, meaning the amount that they get to spend, you know, and what the programs they're choosing. And this is kind of on the side, you know, you have the things that you don't have a choice about, which is like food, Medicare and food stamps and all those, you know, unemployment insurance. All those are kind of mandatory spending that the government can't control. But if you look at the discretionary side, the part that they actually can decide how much they spend, and if you look over the past 40 years, there was only 3 years when the government actually cut. It was 64, 68. It was, you know, Kennedy, Johnson, I think it was the war. You know, they were worried about spending too much back then. And then it was 96 with Clinton. So every other year, we actually had more and more government spending. Well, 1998 comes around, and what happens? We have 4 years in a row where the government cuts the budget. I mean, cuts their discretionary spending. Okay, so think about this. The private sector is contracting, and the credit is being destroyed because we have basically a crisis of confidence because we've taken out too much debt. And then the government goes and does the exact same thing. And what this did was it made it so that Bernanke and the other central banks had to do these crazy, crazy, you know, monetary stimulus programs, and then it didn't work. And they tried to stimulate the economy, but, you know, for a whole host of reasons we can talk about, but that just didn't work. Now, let's contrast that to today. COVID comes along, And what does the government do? The government doesn't go and stop spending. In fact, the government goes and spends tons. And they also, at the same time, do all the monetary stimulus that they did in the previous time. And if you think back to, you know, the March COVID crisis, when everyone was very scared about the economy, very scared that the markets were going to collapse, I was telling people, I said, listen, the government can fill a lot of this hole. People do not understand that the reason it was so bad before was because the government wasn't doing this, wasn't doing the fiscal. And this time when they did it, the big surprise is being how much, you know, both the markets and the economy have done well subsequent to the COVID crisis. Like, you know, we look at this and things are terrible. The economy is still awful. And I just want to take a moment out here to say I'm by no means trying to diminish the personal and the toll this has had on a lot of people. And I completely understand. And one of the problems is that we're throwing money out there and it's often not getting to the right people. So I don't want to try to make this sound like things are great because they're not. But, you know, I work in the markets for a living and I have to just kind of guess where the market's going to go. So it doesn't do me any good to sit around and talk about the terribleness of kind of on the personal basis because it's not my job.
All right, guys. Unfortunately, due to time, we've got to cut the interview off right there. But get on Google and just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast. You can hit the subscribe button so every show and every interview just gets emailed to you. You can listen to it whenever you want through your computer, through your phone. Super easy. Just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Bunch of different sites will come up. You can go to mynorthwest.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on another site called Stitcher, Podbean, you name it. Just Google Know Your Risk Radio podcast. It'll come right up. And you can hear the rest of this. I really want you to hear the rest of this interview because I think Kevin's got some great insights and really, really lays out some interesting points about what's coming up in 2021 and 2022. And I want investors to be aware of it. Anyway, thank you guys so much for your time. Have a wonderful weekend. Go Hawks. We'll see you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio podcast on Know Your Risk Radio.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.